Ron Ananian.
You know, the value of a car is only measured by what sort of service it gives you.
The Car Doctor.
So it's when it's in warm-up mode, right? It's only going to run off of open loop, and it's not going to let the O2 sensors influence it until they heat up. Is that correct?
Correct. Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. That number again, 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's 24-7 hotline. Always there, always working, just like the Car Doctor always is, fixing cars. But that phone number is there for you if you wish to call. 855-560-9900. Toll free, anytime, day or night. It's 24-7. Like I said, you can leave a message, and Tom Ray, our executive producer, will call you up and get you in the queue for the next live broadcast. We are live out on the network Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m., and we go across this great country of ours and around the world, I guess. We actually appear in some very different places. We were just talking about it, referencing that somewhere in London, there is a pub that is downloading podcasts of the Car Doctor. Well, and I guess that's sort of legal. We'll let them get away with it. And it's warm beer in the Car Doctor on Friday night or Monday night, whatever the heck it is, something along those lines. And we appreciate that. And I guess the British are really starved for talent, so they decided to listen to this show instead.
Can I get the warm beer without the Car Doctor show?
You probably could.
Excellent.
You know why the British drink warm beer?
Because they listen to the Car Doctor show?
No, because Lucas, the guys who make electrical systems for Jaguar, also make refrigerators.
Really?
So, yeah. So they don't. Nothing they do works.
I was going to say they must work just as good as cars. Huh?
Yeah. It just doesn't work. But anyway, that's that story. And but again, you can call that phone number, and Tom and our young producer in training, Motorhead Matt, there will be soon manning the phones and taking charge as we continue to move this radio show forward. I want to do this because I didn't get to do it last hour. And actually, I want to do two things now before I go into the Repair of the Week conversation, because nobody can answer this question last hour either. Here's the trivia question from last hour. In 1907, so like I said before, when Tom was in grade school, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. patent number 912831, for what device? I'll even give you a little bit of a clue. Was it windshield wipers, disc brakes, convertible roofs, brake lights, or turn signals? Which one was it? In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent for what device? Windshield wipers, disc brakes, convertible roofs, brake lights, or turn signals? And as before, as I said, we will give away, we will send out a Car Doctor t-shirt to the lucky winner. No guarantee on size because we are getting down to the bottom of the barrel. We've got a reorder. We've actually got a new version Car Doctor t-shirt coming out, which I've just been busy, folks, been fixing a lot of cars. It's been crazy in the shop, I'll tell you what, the last 4 or 5 months.
Have you found a new place to put them when they come in? Last time we were tripping over them here in the studio.
Well, no, it's just I'm going to keep them away from you, though, because, you know, I think half of them ended up on eBay. And the former illustrious producer, not to be named, I think he took some of them home, sold them in a garage sale. USI's faulty parts that may cause auto gas tank leaks. You know, as if the automobile industry doesn't have enough problems, right? The Takata airbag recall bankrupted Takata. Here we go again. U.S. safety regulators and automakers are trying to track down gas tank flanges that can crack and cause fuel leaks on what could be millions of cars and trucks. NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, began investigating parts made by German supplier Continental Automotive GmbH after the company filed recall documents this week saying the parts could be defective. The documents posted Friday by the agency, that's National Highway Traffic, said Continental sold the potentially faulty flanges to 11 automakers and 5 other parts supply companies. Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi already have recalled nearly 500,000 vehicles because of leaky flanges, which cover openings in the fuel tank for the fuel pump and other items. How can the auto industry, how can we keep making things bad? I don't understand. It's not like cars were just invented yesterday. Cars as we know them are, to what level internal combustion engine, they've been around over 100 years. We're making more and more garbage every day. I don't So just be aware, that's the next recall we're going to see. Get out to National Highway and Traffic Safety, NHTSA.gov, for more information. Had a car this week. That wrapped up. Now I'm all done. Now that gives me my, you know, now I can go forward and do my thing. Had a car this week, a 2014 Chevrolet Malibu. Check engine light on. P015A is an apple. Fault code 4, the upstream oxygen sensor did not switch fast enough. Now watch what I say. You know, back when O2 sensors first came out, we just wanted to see that they work. Did they range in voltage? Did they go high to low, low to high? Did they do what they're supposed to do? As time went on, cars got more involved, more obviously technologically complex, and they found ways to measure what are the individual sensors doing. So the car was getting better and better at testing itself. They are now looking at oxygen sensors or air fuel sensors, depending upon the brand and model of car. But in a generic sense, they are looking for the O2s to show a very quick switch rate very early. You know, before the engine is hit 30 degrees over base temp, they want that O2 sensor working. They want to light that O2 off very, very quickly. And it's come down to the point now where I measured it on a scan tool. Within 24 seconds, the downstream O2 was working. The upstream O2 was a little behind, which tells me there's a problem there, but not the particular problem that will fix this that this vehicle has. And I guess my point is, where we once tested an oxygen sensor, for example, one way, we now test it five different ways. We look at times rich to lean to rich, how quick before it comes online, how often it switches, and you know, a bunch of other things. They're testing them very, very thoroughly in order to make sure that the vehicle operates correctly. 0115A is a fault code for a rich to lean switch. In other words, the O2 sensor was reporting a high voltage, meaning that there was an absence of oxygen and it was calling for it to be leaned out. But it didn't happen fast enough. And when I say fast enough, it was less than a millisecond. And that's what they're looking at today. That's why fixing cars is getting so difficult and complicated. In the end, the repair for this car, well, we think we know the repair because I found a very obscure bulletin. And watch where they go here. GM... internal document, PIP 5389B, service engine lamp on with a P015A. This came out May of 2016. So this bulletin's over a year old. 2012 to 16, Equinox, Terrain, Verano, Cadillac ATS, Chevrolet Malibu, Chevrolet Impala, Colorado GMC with the 2425 LCV and 25 LKW motor. So it's just about everything in that model year. They want you to go through and check. Let me get down to that part of it. Complete repairs. Inspect the engine oil level for being overfull. If oil level is found to be overfilled, readjust the correct level and reevaluate. If they don't lead to a resolution, you ready for this line? If the above steps of checking oil level and standard diagnostics don't lead to a resolution, advise the customer that engineering is aware of this concern and is working towards a repair. What the heck does that mean? I can tell you what it means because I found out the answer, but I'm just a little dramatic pause here. What does that mean? All of a sudden we don't know what's wrong with the car that we're making? The problem they're having is that as the sensors age and they degrade slightly, they're not as crisp and as sharp in terms of change as they once were. And what General Motors has come up with is a reflash. You've got to reflash this car to fix it. And it made me think, how many cars are going to have oxygen sensors thrown at them because they can't diagnose it? I spoke to a hotline service in reference to this car because this one was a little deep. This one had a lot of theory in terms of figuring it out and had a lot of information required. And I spoke to a hotline service and they said this particular code on this particular car is difficult to diagnose because of how it occurs. It happens once every 8 hours, or it happens once after an 8-hour vehicle soak. That means you've got to shut the car off 4 o'clock in the afternoon, not come back to it till the next morning, or midnight, but who's going to work on it at midnight? Come back to it at midnight, I'm sorry, 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's when it's going to run its test to see, will it pass? Will it have a fast enough switch rate? All I can say is, wow, where are we going to get the technology from? Here's a car that needs a software update. How many shops can do software? I had a conversation with a customer yesterday. New fellow walked in. We were talking about capabilities, and I explained to him what we can do and how we do it. And he said, yeah, my old mechanic doesn't have the ability to do computer flashing. And I said, well, that's why he's your old mechanic. But the bigger picture becomes that how soon before it's mandatory where every shop is going to have to flash? I think the day is here. The time is here, clearly. The day is here. The time is now where if you can't flash a vehicle, you're not going to be able to really take the car in the door. How are you going to work on it? You're just, it's gotten out of hand. So, I'm working on getting the flash. I have to get the vehicle back. I found this information after I let the vehicle go, telling him what I knew at that point and did more research. And I guess the reason this stood out in my mind was not to get up here and talk about flashing, which you've heard me talk about for so often, but to talk about flashing and to let you know that once again, it serves a very great purpose. But more importantly, when you're picking a mechanic, you know, if you come to me in 2 years and say, Ron, I picked a mechanic and he didn't have flashing and I don't know what to do, you know what? That's why your car's not getting fixed. You know, the latest tools and equipment are a sign of the times and of the capability of that particular mechanic. So just be aware of it. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor coming back right after this.
Every highway, let me slip away on you.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here. And 855-560-9900 is the phone number as always. And here to talk to you about your car problem and help you deal with it. Because that's what this radio show is all about. And keep in mind, that number is 24/7. You can call it any time, day or night. And get up here on the Car Doctor Hotline, and we'll talk to you on our next live broadcast. We're out on the network Saturdays, 2 to 4 p.m., and talking to you about automobile problems. And that's what we do, folks. Speaking of problems, in 1907, I can't believe I can't get an answer to this. Maybe I should let everybody cheat and use Google. In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. number 912831, for what device? I thought by now somebody would have gotten this. Maybe Car Doctor t-shirts are worthless. I'm not sure. Let me see what the deal is here. In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. number 912831, for what device? Was it windshield wipers, disc brakes, convertible roofs, brake lights, or turn signals? And we'll give the answer away by the end of the hour if nobody gets it. No, we're not going to give Tom a t-shirt because he's already got one on today. Yes, Tom, you had a question.
Actually, it was something something I saw online that I sent you yesterday, and I was a little stunned by your answer coming back. What this was, it looks like duct tape. It had pictures of, well, mice and rats on it, and right. It was called, I believe it was made by Honda. It was called rodent tape, and I went, no, this has to be a lot of bunk. And I sent it to you saying, look at this. And you said, it's a real product and it works. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Honda rodent tape, part number 4019-2317. I stock it. I use it. It is a material like duct tape that is impregnated with pepper and all this nasty tasting, sharp, not that I know this, you know, not that I've eaten any of it, but the idea is that if you're leaving your vehicle parked, you would, you know, wrap the wiring harness or wrap certain areas to keep the animals from chewing on it. Heck, I've had people tell me that they've wrapped the rubber hose on their barbecue, all right, because squirrels love to eat rubber hoses on, you know, gas barbecues. You just wrap it around that, and it'll help protect it. I've also seen some cars, which makes me wonder what we're putting in the water supply, because I've also seen some cars where it's got the Honda rodent tape, and these animals have just chewed through it. I don't want to see what the animal is that can eat this stuff, you know, because it would be like a human being taking sulfuric acid out of a battery. I can't imagine. But yeah, it's real. And, it, you know, for your application, for everyone else's information, but for your application, Tom, yeah, to use it on a generator stuck out in the woods for the radio transmitter work you do during the week, it would make sense.
Yeah, I think that would be very cool. It you know, because I recently had a situation. Actually, I had a squirrel get into something. And usually for a mouse or something, I'll block the hole with a it's electrician's clay. The squirrel ate through it. And it was like, okay, and you know, maybe I'll give this a try and see what happens.
You want to see me tell a dirty joke on radio?
Sure.
About the squirrels. You know, the squirrel says, you know, show us your nuts. Okay, let's go over and talk to Dave in Iowa, 2000 Monte Carlo with an ignition system problem. Dave, are you there, sir?
Dave. Hey, how are you, Ron?
Good,
nice to talk to you again.
Yes, sir. What's going on?
I got my own personal friend who's a mechanic, okay, and we went over and looked at that Monte Carlo, and he told me to take a, we're not going to put any money in it, you know, I'll blow it up before I put another nickel in it.
Right.
But I've got an Oldsmobile, the same, he says the same engine, and we could take the part off of that and put it on that Monte Carlo. And he said, I said, are you sure they're the same? He said he checked it out, and he said, I said, I'm not sure if it's going to work or not. He said, well, the car won't know where it's from, whether it's an Oldsmobile or a Chevrolet. And I thought that was kind of, you know, flip. But
well,
anyway, is that possible?
Sure.
That it could work?
And I'll tell you how you could find out. Simple enough. Do you have access to the web?
Yes, sir,
All
I
right.
do.
So go out to O'ReillyAuto.com. Go out to O'ReillyAuto.com, Parts House, O'Reilly Auto Parts, and look up both applications. And if both, you know, regardless of manufacturer, but if both applications come back as the same vendor, then by all means, it should work. There's no reason why it wouldn't. All right?
You know, I think he tried that, Ron. And I had another couple of questions real quick. I know you've got time to run, you know, help other people.
Yeah.
But I want to know when you're going to go on that ride across to Australia. And then I also want to tell you that since I'm down here in Iowa, I'm going to go up to the university up there where they're building that car, you know, the solar car. And I'm going to – we can make $1 million on this one. We're going to get a solar motorcycle. How about a solar Harley?
Yeah, but where are you going to put the panels?
Well, on the back, like those little three-wheelers, you know. You'll just have to be like a grandpa,
Maybe we'll make a solar motorcycle that'll have to have a sidecar because that's where the solar panels will be.
Well, that sounds even better.
Yeah.
See, if we're working together, we're going to be rich.
Yeah, that way it'll go even further. So I like that idea. As far as going to Australia, Dave, probably not anytime soon. I'm waiting for Walt from Maui to have me out to Hawaii so we can do the radio show from the beach of Hawaii. And when we get to Hawaii, we'll just swing left and go down to Australia for a couple of weeks, and maybe we can coordinate it that way. So, but
I'll try to keep contact with you, Ron, on the internet when I get it. I drove over mine.
Yeah,
I drove over my iPad. I dropped it out of the truck and backed over it.
Yeah, that's no good either, my man. Hey, listen, I got to go. The clock's going to take me. But like I said, get out to O'ReillyAuto.com. You can look up your parts there and cross-reference them. They should work. If it says they're the same, then they're the same. You know, and that will be a very good definitive source. I appreciate the call from you, David. Keep in mind that, you know, we can use a lot of what's on the internet for direct references, a lot of catalog and information out there. That's why looking to the web sometimes is the right answer. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, are rolling along looking for your call. Give us a shout. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Let's go over and talk to Dan in Wisconsin, 2012 Dodge Caravan and some blue smoke. Never a good sign. Dan, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
I've got a 2012 Dodge Ram. It's a cargo van.
Okay.
3.6 liter in it.
Okay.
And it's smoking.
Yeah.
A lot.
Oil consumption?
And number six, oil consumption. Is not. It doesn't leak. There's not a drop of oil on the ground.
All right.
But number six cylinder's fouled out. And I'm wondering if it could be just something as, you know, I guess, lack of a better way of saying it, as simple as valve stem seals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or are we looking like a new head or new engine?
How many miles are on this, Dan?
161,000.
Okay. So let's look at this from a couple of different scenarios, and then we'll talk about how to diagnose it. At 161,000 miles, Are you going to just do one cylinder head or both?
Well, if that's what it is, I would probably just do the number 246 head.
Okay.
That seems to be the one Chrysler's had the most problems with.
Right. And they have had problems with the heads. So, you know, at that case, then, yeah, it's probably in the head. You would need to do some further detailed diagnosis, valve cover off, air the cylinder, measure rock in the valve guide against the valve stem. But the problem is, how tough is it to get access to this thing? It's probably a crowded engine compartment. Is it the back head or the front head?
It's the front head.
Okay. Well, thank God for that, right? That's the easy one to get to. So something. Then yep. It probably can't be the head. It's too easy to work on. right? So how long has it been doing
this? The last real car that I worked on was my 69 Roadrunner with a 383 in it.
Boy, it's amazing.
That was back in the late 70s.
I think you're the third or fourth guy in a month to call up talking about old school Roadrunners. It's amazing how many people had those, right?
I still had mine.
Yeah, well, and every person to a one says the same thing. I wish I still had mine. Go out and get one. So those cars are coming down in price too, brother. Do you ever look at the pricing on some of those things?
Oh yeah, I watch that Barrett Auto Auction and stuff, and
don't watch
those things are cherry.
Well, don't watch Barrett Jackson. I got to tell you, not to make a comment about it, but I will. Don't watch Barrett Jackson. Barrett Jackson has done more towards ruining what classic cars are worth in the sport and the hobby than any other single organization, in my opinion, because they've overinflated everything. Everything's worth $1 million now, and it makes people afraid to drive a car. And I don't agree with that. I think that, this stuff's made to be driven, because at the rate things are going, 30 years from now, when there's no more gasoline and everything's an electric car, all these Hemi Cudas that are $500,000 or more aren't going to be worth anything, because nobody's going to know what to do with them.
Right.
By all means.
Going back to the van.
Yeah.
I found a 2017 that's wrecked. It's got 11,000 miles on it. It's got the same 3.6 liter. Would that work in mine, or have they changed enough changes in them where that one probably is even run?
I've got to say they've probably changed enough that it may not physically bolt up, match up, or plug in. But what you could do is reference the local Chrysler store and tell them you've got a 2012. They're going to ask for the VIN, and if that other engine still has a vehicle attached to it, you can get the VIN off of that and reference both of them. If they tell you a replacement head would fit either vehicle, then in theory they should both be the same. And then, but you don't want to do the head; you want to do the whole engine, is what you're saying.
Well, I want to get by fixing this as inexpensively as possible.
Yeah.
I can get valve guide seals from Napa or somebody for $40,
right?
For a whole set.
Well, but chances,
whereas you go to Chrysler, they want $6 a piece.
Right. Well, but the problem is it valve guide seals, or is the guide itself worn out? My understanding is these tend to wear the guide. All right. So
yeah,
tend to wear out the guide. And then the other thing I just want to caution you against is, how long has this been smoking blue? How many miles? How many months?
I just bought it. I bought it as a work van, knowing that the engine is bad,
right?
Or going bad,
right?
The guy, he bought it at $155,000, and it was not smoking then.
Okay.
And then it just started, he's put 6,000 or 7,000 miles on it, 6,000 or 7,000 in a year and a half.
Because here's the concern I've got: when a newer vehicle starts to show blue smoke, all right. It tells me that it's reached a point where the catalytic converter can no longer mask the condition. Got to remember, cats are very efficient, and it will mask an oil burner by actually creating a chemical change inside the cat and reducing the volume of smoke, if any at all. When it finally gets to the point where it's coming out the tailpipe, it's pretty bad. I bet you've got to have an oil consumption issue, right?
Well, according to Chrysler, everything I've read online, that if you use a quart of oil every 1,000 miles.
Yeah, they consider that acceptable. Right. Yeah. Another example of we made engines for 107 years, and now we can't make anything last longer than, you know, because this is the way it is.
You know, I've got two Chevys that I change oil on every 5,000 miles, and they don't take a drop.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I've got. Says a 1,000. You know, a quart every 1,000 miles is okay.
I've got a 97 Ford Ranger with 211,000 miles on it. It doesn't burn or leak a drop of oil in between changes. Yeah. And I get it.
You know, I found an engine at a junkyard. They want $850 bucks for it. It's got 50,000 miles on it.
Okay.
But, you're going to get the same thing you got now?
Right.
You know,
and that's the problem. You see, and the problem becomes that, you know, when does this have a cat problem? You don't know. When does this wear out the other head? You don't know. So, you know, you could do this as cheap as possible. Maybe it's a weekend of elbow grease and a head gasket set and just swap out the head with something else. There are a bunch of places online you can buy reman heads. Just be wary of what you're getting. I still like to buy engine parts from the local guy because I've got somebody to go back and talk to when there's a problem, you know, whenever there's an issue. But, you know, by all means, you're kind of headed in the right direction. All right. If it's easy enough to get to, what I would probably do to help move the conversation along is I would get, you got the ability to air the cylinder, Dan, you know, fill the cylinder up with air.
I've got a compressor.
Yeah.
A compressor. I just have to get the adapter.
Right.
The holes.
You know, if you got an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you, get out to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. They'll have the adapters you need. And, you know, you can just air the cylinder, close the valve, air the cylinder, and take the valve spring off. You'll need to buy some tools for that, but take the valve spring off and wrap a rubber band around the valve stem. Remember this from high school auto shop where you would wrap the rubber band around the valve stem and then you can lift the valve safely off the seat without having it fall into the head, into the cylinder?
Yep.
And then you can just, you know, open it up 10,000ths and just rock the valve. Rock the valve stem against the guide and see what your wear is. You might want to put an indicator on it. Maybe they're so badly wiped out you won't even, you know, you'll just know that, oh, yeah, a quarter of an inch isn't good. you know, that's the oops
there's
stage.
No kick or nothing. The thing runs like a top in town. You know, it doesn't mess, pop, bang, or nothing. But,
hey, listen.
You know, I've got an engine code that says the catalytic converter on that side of the engine is bad.
Right, P0420 or 430.
Into the exhaust manifold.
Right. Yeah. Right, and the reason, so that tells me.
$350 for a head and $350 for a manifold, I'm up to $800 again.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, and that tells me that this leak's been going on for a while because you're probably also going to find that at some point you'll put a couple of oxygen sensors in this as well because if the cat's been coated with oil, so's the O2. So, you know, listen, you can do this as inexpensively as you like. It just depends. You got to have a high tolerance for doing it again when something doesn't go right. So I would tell you, you know, measure how much play the guide has in it. Make sure it's in that head. There's nothing else strange going on. Then, you know, yeah, you can use an aftermarket cat. It won't last as long as an OE, but who cares? It's a 160,000-mile, 5-year-old work van. Be prepared to put O2 sensors in it. And, you know, you can kind of take it from there. But never underestimate how much oil can pump through a guide when it's worn like that because you'll be surprised, you know, what the rest of that exhaust system and catalytic converter look like. All right, sir? Very good. Dan, good luck to you and yours, and get that Roadrunner. Beep, beep. And send us pictures when you do. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this.
Shut up and start talking.
That's me. I'm broadcasting. Hey, Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900, 24/7 phone number. Keep that in mind during the week, 855-560-9900. Call, leave a message, and our executive producer, whoever that might be at the rotation of the dial there, will give you a call. I got a feeling it's going to be Motorhead Matt as Tom Ray is stepping aside so he can resort to his real talents, that of sweeping the floors and cleaning the head. Answers to the trivia question for the last 2 hours. I'm amazed nobody got this. In 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton applied for a patent, U.S. number 912831, for what device? Turn signals. And the correct answer is turn signals were a big advancement for automobile safety, but they would not blink until 1920. Now, I always thought turn signals were like the Three Stooges, which we were just, you know, paying tribute to, where it was, you know, you stuck your hand out, smacked the cop in the face as you were approaching the intersection. That was way, you know, which way to turn the car. But I guess
a wise guy, eh?
Yeah, that's me, certainly. But yeah, 1911, and I'm sorry, that was 1907, Percy Douglas Hamilton, and turn signals. So we've all got that. Hey, a little bit of a car doctor. Well, I don't know what you want to call this. Call it whatever you want. John Stapmuller, JS, I know him as. Mustang aficionado, Ford guy. He's been laid up in the hospital for the past week or so, and I just read on Facebook that he's being released today, and I just want to take the minute here to wish him Godspeed and healthy recovery and a quick recovery. JS, glad to see you're out of the hospital, and I know he's a podcaster. He might be listening right now. Let him hear his name on radio and get better soon, buddy. We miss you down at the shop. We were talking last week also, I want to comment on this, about plugging into the future. Anthony Emilio sent us the Chicago Tribune article about electric cars and the way the electric car thing is going to change, and it's growing, and electric cars are cheaper to operate and all that. Did anybody catch the article this week about Volvo in the news? By 2020, Volvo will not make an internal combustion engine. Let's have a pregnant pause there.
I saw the one that said the cars coming out recently are going to be all hybrid and or just electric.
Right.
But I didn't see that one.
By 2020, Volvo, I think it's 2019, they're shooting for, clearly by 2020, Volvo will not make an internal combustion engine vehicle. Wow. What is that going to do? Does that mean all those guys in the Middle East are sitting there going, now what are we going to do with all this oil? Nobody's going to want it. Now we're going to see gas a quarter a gallon. I mean, it could happen. All right. Somebody also told me, and I have not found this yet, but in France this week, not that it matters what France says, but in France this week, there was talk and conversation about they will no longer be producing internal combustion engines in the French car companies, whatever's left, after 2021 or 2020 as well. Everything is clearly going electric or hybrid. And you have to say to yourself, you know, to what level and how will this impact future economies? Because I'm telling you right now, you may not believe me, but the automobile is such a huge part of the world economy. As electric vehicles grow in dominance, less gasoline, less repairs, less problems, you're going to see the economies of the world shift. It's going to get to be very, very interesting. So just something to be aware of, you know, just like, wow, again. Let's do a quick piece of email. I want to get this one out while I can. This one comes to us from Richard in the southwest corner of Lansing, Michigan. He'd like to know what percentage of regular synthetic constitutes a synthetic blend. You know what, Richard? I'm not sure about that, to be blunt and honest. And I've never really paid much attention to synthetic blend. Synthetic blend oil is not one of my favorites. I personally think that if you're going to the expense of synthetic blend, you might as well go to a synthetic. It's a few pennies more. It's better protection. The car can run longer in between drain intervals, and you'll be much better off in the long run doing it that way. So just stay with the synthetic over the synthetic blend. Just be aware that, you know, I got to think that the percentage of blend ratio varies by manufacturers. You can get out to PennzoilSynthetics.com and read more about it as far as how they make their synthetic and their synthetic blends. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. I got 2 minutes. Let's go over to Yosef in Kansas. Yosef, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help real quick?
My question is, can you convert a 1995 Ford Windstar transmission to an 03 Windstar at all, or is there any problems with that at all? Or
my initial reaction is no, it can't be done, and I'll tell you why. All right. In 95 cars, things were much more mechanical, much more solenoid operated, much less electronic. 03, and it's nothing compared to the cars of today, but in 03, they were headed towards more electronic-driven componentry to give us the cars that we have today. If they could take one component out of the trans in 95 and moved its job into the powertrain control module so that it was now done electronically with software updates instead of having to maintain a part, The cost savings is huge, and that's what you always have to think about. The ability for them to not have to store that part, make that part, assemble that part, install that part, warranty that part. Now they can fix whatever that part did by a software update. Now think about that.
Okay,
the way I would approach this is I would get down to a salvage yard and see do they have a and back in the day it was a Hollander interchange guide, and they would look up. Now if that says 95 to 03 is the same, yeah, then you can do it. But if it doesn't, I don't believe there's going to be any way you could economically make that change and fabricate it and make it fit and make it work and make it do everything it's supposed to do. You'd be better off finding something closer to or an exact fit for an 03 Windstar. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. The mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.